How far would you actually go? Maybe how radically would you change your life to escape grief, like sudden crushing grief?
It's a powerful question.
Yeah, and the sources we're diving into today tell this incredible story of someone who tried just that, a kind of total immersion, almost trying to shed her human skin.
To adopt the mindset of a predator, really.
Right, exactly. We're launching a deep dive into Helen McDonald's amazing memoir, H.I.'s for Hawk.
And it really is genre-defying. I mean, this book, it blends such personal grief with rigorous natural history, even literary biography.
That blew people away, right?
Yeah.
Didn't it win the Samuel Johnson Prize in the Costa Book of the Year?
It absolutely did. It really shook up what people thought nature writing could be.
So our mission today is to unpack McDonald's really unconventional path, processing her father's sudden death by training a goshawk.
Yeah, and not just any hawk, the goshawk. Notoriously difficult, maybe the most ferocious bird a falconer can handle.
So what was she really seeking in this wild partnership? And what did she learn about control, instinct, and, well, her own humanity in the end?
Well, let's start with McDonald herself, just to set the scene. She's a poet, a naturalist, an academic, Cambridge, in fact.
Right.
And her childhood, it sounds like, it was really shaped by her father, Alistair. He was a photojournalist.
Ah.
And this gave her a really deep, early passion for falconry, for birds of prey. This wasn't just a passing thing for her. It was like a lifelong focus.
So she knew her stuff. She had the background.
Oh, absolutely.
But even that couldn't prepare her for what happened next.
The catalyst?
No. Her father died suddenly. A heart attack. Just gone.
And the sources say she was plunged into this grief so profound it felt like madness.
Yeah, complete internal collapse. It wasn't just sadness. It was like the world stopped making sense. Total destabilization.
She felt unmoored.
Completely.
Yeah.
And the usual ways people mourn, you know, friends, family, time, they just didn't seem to touch it. She needed something drastic, something completely non-human.
And that desperation, that's what led to this incredibly impulsive act.
Almost self-destructive, you could say. Right. She pulls out all her cash, 800 pounds.
Yep, 800 pounds cash, drives north, ends up on some bleak quayside in Scotland.
And buys Hawk, a 10-week-old goshawk.
Mabel.
Mabel. And the choice of bird here is just crucial. This really shows how radical this was.
Okay, explain that. Why the goshawk?
Well, most beginners in falconry, they might start with something like a kestrel, maybe a peregrine. They're wild, sure, but easier to manage to condition.
Right.
The goshawk, though, it's like the fighter jet of the woods.
Yeah.
Short wings, built for aggression, incredibly volatile. They never really truly tame, not like other birds.
So she didn't just pick a hobby. She picked the hardest, most intense challenge possible, a confrontation.
Exactly. Why? Because she wanted armor, emotional armor. She wanted to escape that wounded, grieving human part of herself.
And become the hawk.
Adopt its mindset, yeah. Pure, unsentimental instinct. No sorrow, no memory, no regrets. Just the cold, clear logic of survival. She wanted out of the messiness of human feeling. That actually makes a strange kind of sense. A primal connection, maybe? Based on rules, vigilance, high stakes, not love or history.
That seems to be it. The only way out of the grief was through total dedication, mental, physical, everything to this creature.
And that meant discipline. Immediate. Brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. She just retreated, completely cut herself off from the human world.
But it wasn't like a peaceful retreat, right? It was demanding.
Incredibly demanding. Her life instantly became ruled by hawk time.
Okay, let's unpack hawk time. What did that actually look like day to day? Because the details sound intense.
Exhaustion, basically. Constant vigilance. The main thing was manning the bird, getting it used to her presence, breaking down its fear.
That sounds grueling.
It is. Days, nights, the hawk just sitting on her fist, sleeplessly conditioning it. And managing its weight, this obsessive focus, ounce by ounce. Strong enough to fly, but hungry enough to come back. Agonizing precision.
So she's starving herself of human contact, academic work, everything, while obsessing over the physical needs of this predator.
She basically shut down her old life, lived in this bubble dictated by the hawk. It was deliberate. She wasn't looking for a distraction. She wanted transformation, self-annihilation almost.
And the animal world doesn't do sentimentality, does it?
Zero.
Yeah.
It's unflinchingly honest, which she found compelling, I think.
And this immersion, it leads to this really pivotal moment, Mabel's first kill, a pheasant.
Yes. And McDonald describes feeling this surge, primal, amoral triumph, For a moment, it completely wiped out her human pain.
Wow.
She said she was living in a darker world, a world of blood and bones. It kind of solidified her path, pushed her deeper into the hawk's way of seeing. She was becoming the hunter.
But this whole escape, it wasn't just instinctual for her, was it? She's an academic. There was an intellectual side, too.
Absolutely central. Mm-hmm. Alongside Training Mabel, she was deep into this parallel investigation, looking at another writer, T.H. White.
T.H. White. The author of The Sword and the Stone.
The very same. And this is where the book gets so unique, blending these threads. White wrote his own book back in the 1930s, also called The Goshawk.
No way.
Yes. And it detailed his own attempt to train a goshawk, which was tortured, abusive, and ultimately failed. Completely failed.
So why bring White into her own grief project? Was he like a guide
or
a warning?
More like a cautionary mentor, a dark mirror. McDonald was obsessed with succeeding where White had failed so spectacularly.
Okay.
She needed that intellectual framework, I think, to navigate her own journey into this wildness. White's story, with all its cruelty and despair, showed the dangers. It was a historical precedent for the path she was choosing.
This is where it gets really gripping, because that escape, that immersion, it can't last forever, right?
Yeah.
Her own lived experience starts pushing back against the theory.
Right. The self-imposed isolation starts to crack. There's this terrifying moment of self-confrontation.
Yeah, the window reflection.
Yeah. She's deep in this self-neglect, exhausted, living in squalor almost, totally focused on the rock. And she catches her reflection in a dirty window.
What does she see?
A thin, mad-eyed, hawk-faced woman. The shock isn't just the state she's in. It's recognizing that the wildness, the feral energy she wanted from the hawk, had actually taken root inside her.
Oh, wow. So the wilderness wasn't just outside anymore, it was inside, consuming her. She looked like the creature she was training.
Exactly. She saw this haunted stranger staring back, and that's the crucial turning point. She realizes the hawk's wildness isn't healing her. It's actually threatening to consume her humanity. It risked pushing her into the same kind of pathology that destroyed T.H. White's attempt.
But her brain, her academic side, that's what pulls her back.
Yes. The very intellect she tried to suppress becomes her lifeline. Her scholarly skills give her the leverage she needs.
How did the work on White help specifically in that moment?
She started digging deeper into his archives, his private diaries, letters, and she discovered something crucial.
What was that?
White's cruelty towards his goshawk, it wasn't really about the bird. It stemmed from his own profound self-loathing, his loneliness, his repressed trauma. He was projecting all his internal pain onto the hawk, trying to dominate it because he couldn't handle his own feelings.
So understanding his issues allowed her to see her own situation more clearly. That intellectual distance was the key.
That was the aha moment. By dissecting White's pathology, she could finally differentiate it from her own raw grief. They weren't the same thing.
So the goal shifted. It wasn't about becoming the hawk escaping humanity anymore.
Right. It couldn't be self-annihilation or dominance. It had to be something else, a negotiated partnership. Finding a way to integrate the experience, not be consumed by it.
That distinction, pathology versus grief, that saved her, essentially.
It seems so. Healing meant she had to stop trying to be the hawk and figure out how to be human again. But a changed human, one who could incorporate the hawk's intensity, its focus, without losing herself.
So the final part of the story is this slow climb back, re-entry into the human world.
Yeah, slow and difficult. She doesn't just get over the grief, she learns to carry it differently. The hawk, ironically, forced her to confront her own humanity and choose to return to it, scarred but whole.
Which brings us to the big takeaways, the philosophy behind it all. And it's not the usual warm, fuzzy view of nature, is it?
Not at all. McDonald is really uncompromising. Nature, the hawk, it's brutal, it's amoral, it's utterly indifferent to human suffering. It's not some gentle therapist waiting in the woods.
So the lesson isn't escape to nature.
No, it's grounded in what she calls radical empathy, which isn't just appreciating a sunset. It's recognizing the profound otherness of the wild.
And recognizing the wildness isn't just out there.
Exactly. That the wild and the civilized aren't opposites. They're tangled up inside us. Acknowledging that hawk within ourselves, the fierce instinctual part, is actually essential to being fully human.
And maybe that's why the book hit such a nerve. It shows grief isn't neat. It's wild, unpredictable. It doesn't follow stages.
Definitely. And healing can come from unexpected, demanding places, like the focused, unsentimental presence of a non-human creature. It demanded something different from her.
Professionally, it left a huge mark, too. This blend of memoir, natural history, literary criticism.
It practically defined what people now call the new nature writing, that braiding of the personal, the scientific, the literary.
And culturally.
Well, it opened up a much wider conversation, I think, about the real therapeutic power of engaging deeply with the natural world, even its harshness. And it validated the messy, irrational reality of loss, offering something beyond those neat, polite stories about mourning we often get.
So you've got this incredibly layered story. On one level, it's a gripping memoir about training this fierce bird.
High stakes, absolutely.
And on another, it's this deep dive into literary history,
yeah,
analyzing T.H. White's failure. She went into the wilderness, literally and metaphorically, maybe intending to disappear.
But what's so powerful, I think, is that the hawk didn't teach her how to escape humanity. It taught her how to find her way back to it by mastering its language, that demanding focus, that presence. The real challenge she overcame was integrating all her knowledge, falconry, literature, history, with the raw physical, emotional reality of grief and life.
The hawk wasn't the escape hatch. It was the mirror she needed to finally see herself.
Precisely. It forced the confrontation.
Which leaves us, and you listening, with maybe a final thought to chew on.
Yeah, provocative question, perhaps. What's the hawk in your own life? What demanding, maybe difficult, all-consuming engagement helps you navigate your own challenges, learn its unique, hard language, and maybe ultimately helps you find your way back to your most authentic, maybe scarred but integrated self?